think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Israeli forces are moving deeper into Gaza, pushing tanks and troops on its main city in an attempt to squeeze Hamas in the center. It comes as Israel says at least 240 hostages are being held in Gaza, and as the terror group blocks evacuations from the war zone.
Obviously, with respect to hostages, Hamas has not yet agreed to release anyone other than the four hostages, including the two American citizens. And with respect to American citizens who want to leave Gaza, they continue to not operate their side of the Rafah gate. So what we have done is try to work with partners who have relationships with Hamas to impress upon them the need to do both. I won't speak to the details of those negotiations. We don't think it's useful to do so publicly, but it is a high priority.
It is a high priority getting the Palestinians out of Gaza, out of harm's way, those who are not members of Hamas. But you face two issues. One, Hamas does not want the civilians to go because they're using them as shields against any incoming fire from Israel. And two, they want to merge with them as they leave Palestine. Or Gaza, I should say, and merge with the other Palestinian brothers and sisters and get into Egypt or elsewhere so they get out of the line of fire. Egypt is still not opening the Rafah Gate, which is at the southern end of the Gaza Strip, not allowing Palestinians to leave. Those that are there are pretty much bunkered down the best they can. I'm looking at one quote from one woman who says, "Just tell us where we can go that's safe." No one can really tell her that at this point. The attacks on Gaza continue. We've had motorized units going up the Mediterranean side of Gaza and going into the northern part of Gaza City, all to try to isolate that section, as you heard from that Fox News report. But negotiations are still having to take a back seat to whatever else is going on. Thank you for joining us. This is October 31, 2023, Halloween Day, and I do have a special Halloween story for you later. But first, thank you for joining us. This is the first of 2 hours of Larry Connors USA back to back, and reminding you that when we are on the air, we are streaming video at News Talk STL Facebook and Twitter, Larry Connors USA Facebook and Twitter, and on Rumble. Easy to find us. If you miss any part of any program, or you want to pull it up, or you want to share it with someone, go to LarryConnorsUSA.com. You'll find all of the programs. So the situation with the updates right now, we're continuing to see, according as you heard in that one report, the IDF is now estimating the number of those held in Gaza as hostages is 240. The number had been going down, then it goes back up. And I remind you what a great miraculous rescue yesterday IDF carried out, getting an Israeli soldier who'd been taken hostage free of Hamas terrorists. No doubt some terrorists were killed in that action, but she is now free, home with her family, and supposedly doing as well as could be expected. But the war itself still has to be dealt with. Former Green Beret Lieutenant Colonel Bucker talking about just how messy it's going to get.
The military agenda is going to be prioritized right now in the short term over all other agendas, which means ultimately these different agendas, all the way from the tactical level to all the way to the strategic level, they're non-compatible, which means ultimately this will be very messy. As no matter what decisions are made, there will be room for criticisms globally. But ultimately, if you are Netanyahu, you're going to prioritize that military agenda and your end state over everything else.
And obviously so. The tunnels that are all under Gaza, hundreds of miles, Now, remember, Gaza itself is just a 25-mile-long stretch of land, 4 to 8 miles wide, but they've got hundreds of miles of tunnels. And one who's gone down in them describes them as dark, terrifying, claustrophobic. Not where you would want to be. But that's where Hamas is hiding and holding hostages and hiding weapons, and often under hospitals or under civilian populations, because that's what these terrorists are best at, hiding behind women's skirts and hiding under babies' cribs. Senator Ted Cruz is not holding his words. He's saying this situation has evolved because of this Biden administration.
One of the most indefensible aspects of the last 2.5 years under Joe Biden is the billions of dollars that have flowed to terrorists who hate us. If there's one simple principle, we should stop giving money to terrorists who want to murder us. Under Joe Biden, roughly $100 billion has flowed to Iran. Iran, the Ayatollah, chants death to America and death to Israel. Iran funds Hamas. They fund Hezbollah. My legislation is designed to cut all of that money off. In addition to that, under Joe Biden, hundreds of millions of dollars have flowed to Gaza. Gaza is controlled by Hamas. And that money from the Biden administration, in a very direct way, is funding the death squads, is funding the rockets. We need to cut all of that off. That's what this legislation is designed to do.
And that is a resolution introduced by Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. A resolution calling for all funding to be cut off of any type to Iran. And that means increasing the sanctions, because those oil sanctions had not been enforced by the Biden administration. And from just those sanctions, they have collected hundreds of millions of dollars. And where are they spending it? Well, they're spending it with the terrorists, using them as their proxies to carry out terror throughout the entire world, and particularly the Middle East. And I remind you, while Senator Cruz is pushing for that to be done and for us to cut the money off, I remind you that you still have Democrats who have made it very clear they're not in favor of the fighting continuing at all. They want a ceasefire. I'm going to get in that in more detail, but I'm reminding you right now there's another resolution that was introduced last week, and that was basically to get more help for Israel and to condemn Hamas. 9 Democrat representatives refused to sign on to it. In fact, rejected it. Senator Cruz says these Dems are proving themselves so very, very wrong.
A number of Democrats have thought it was a good idea to go soft on Iran. I think that has proven spectacularly wrong. Look, I'll give you an example on Gaza. The beginning of the Biden administration wanted to send hundreds of millions of dollars to Gaza. I brought together a coalition of 17 senators, all Republicans, urging the administration, do not send that money to Gaza because it will go to Hamas and Hamas will use it for terrorism. At the same time, 145 House members, all Democrats, sent a letter to the Biden administration saying, do send that money to Gaza, even though it will go to Hamas for terrorism. And what the Biden administration did, they assessed it, and they concluded that there was a high risk, those are their words, high risk, the money would go to Hamas for terrorism. Under ordinary federal law, it's illegal to send money when there's a high risk it'll go to terrorism. But they waived the anti-terrorism law and they sent the money anyway because politically they wanted to send the money even if it ended up being used to murder Jews in Israel.
Yeah, but you know, this
I think
message,
that was a tragic mistake.
It was a tragic mistake. Why would you send money knowing, and if it's already listed as a high risk, it should never have been sent. But the Biden administration, wanting to play nice with the far progressive left, the squad, said, okay, well, let's release the money. Foolish thought that you can buy a terrorist to be your friend. It does not happen. They're not going to be your friend. They're going to still look for a way to kill you, your family, and destroy your country. Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, is speaking as clearly and as loudly as anyone should be.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a turning point for leaders and nations. It is time for all of us to decide if we are willing to fight for a future of hope and promise, or surrender to tyranny and terror. Now rest assured, Israel will fight. Calls for a ceasefire are calls for Israel to surrender to Hamas, to surrender to terrorism, to surrender to barbarism. That will not happen. Ladies and gentlemen, the Bible says that there is a time for peace and a time for war. This is a time for war.
And it is not a war Israel started. They were living basically in peace, surrounded by enemies, until the decision was made by Hamas to rush into Israel, kill and butcher as many as they could, and then run back to their tunnels in Gaza. One good note in all of this so far, one of the many good notes that we can point to, the IDF says it targeted and killed one of the masterminds of the October 7th attack. Good. And they're after others. In fact, one IDF general addressing his troops says, we are going to fight them in the alleys, we'll fight them in the tunnels, we'll fight them in any place we find them. That's resolve. What do we have in this country? A bunch of wishy-washy, oh, well, maybe they should cease fire. Cease fire. That's what Netanyahu is addressing in that statement. Cease fire? Put it this way. Would you have wanted the world or anyone in this nation to say after Pearl Harbor, we should cease fire. We shouldn't do anything in retaliation. Name me one person who would accept that at that point. Now, today, you could probably find dozens, unfortunately. We were never going to accept a position at that time to cease fire, not go to war, do nothing. In the meantime, we have and we continue to allow unknown numbers of the same Hamas, Hezbollah, Taliban terrorists, and others to cross our borders, Biden's open borders.
I need numbers. Again, don't filibuster me. How many people has this administration led into the country?
Let me say at the outset that our job would be a lot easier if the broken immigration system was fixed.
Mr. Secretary, I want a number. How many people have you led into this country?
I should also
comment. I'll give you the number. It's about 6 million. About 1.7 million as known gotaways. Now, again, we don't know who these people are. We just know that they've come to this country and they're residing somewhere. Where are all these people residing? Where did the 6 million people go?
Senator, you speak of encounters, and let me
Would you answer my questions? Where did these 6 million people go? Are you keeping track of them? To what extent do we have a handle on where these 6 million people are in America?
Senator, as you well know, when an individual is indeed released, they are released into immigration enforcement proceedings and are subject to removal if they do not have a legal basis to remain in the United States.
You're not answering the question. Where do these people reside? We know we've got about 100,000 in New York, and New York Mayor Adams says it will destroy New York. That's, by the way, less than 2% of the 6 million people. So less than 2%, 100,000 is going to destroy New York. What's happening around the country? I'm not going to get answers from Secretary Mayorkas.
No, you're not. That is Senator, Wisconsin Senator Johnson. These guys that come to appear before members of the House and our Senate, they play a game. They don't bring any paperwork with them. They try to talk off the top of their head because they're not going to give you an answer. Because they know the answer is damning. Now, they are having a hearing this day. They've been having it on the decision to reauthorize 702, which is part of the FISA Act, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. But unfortunately, we've seen too many times it's been turned on American citizens. We'll get into that later, but right now, I want you to listen to FBI Director Wray, because he's in one of these committee hearings. When it comes to terrorists across the world and us having an open border policy, what do you think is going to happen? Well, here's the evaluation as it stands today by the FBI director.
Here in the United States, our most immediate concern is that violent extremists, individuals or small groups, will draw inspiration from the events in the Middle East to carry out attacks against Americans going about their daily lives. That includes not just homegrown violent extremists inspired by a foreign terrorist organization, but also domestic violent extremists targeting Jewish or Muslim communities. We've already seen that with the individual we arrested last week in Houston who'd been studying how to build bombs and posted online about his support for killing Jews. And with the tragic killing of a six-year-old Muslim boy in Illinois in what we're investigating as a federal hate crime. But as I said a few moments ago, on top of the homegrown violent extremists and domestic violent extremist threat, we also cannot and do not discount the possibility that Hamas or another foreign terrorist organization may exploit the current conflict to conduct attacks here on our own soil.
You would be absolutely stupid to think that they would not take that opportunity, be it coordinated or a, quote, lone wolf operative. We've already encountered and arrested and held at least 150 to 300 known terrorists who are on our no-fly zone, no-fly list. They should not be allowed in the country. They could not fly into the country, but if they could get to Mexico, they could come across the border because our border policy doesn't exist anymore. I do not want you to live in fear of anyone new that comes to your area that seems to be an immigrant that does not appear to be, quote, American. You should not fear, but at the same time, while many are coming here just for a better life, mixed in with them will be the terrorist. And they'll use them as cover just as much as they're doing in Gaza, as Hamas is holding the Palestinian civilians. More on the terrorists going to be coming, obviously. Oh, and one question, where are they now? Take note of this. Take note of this. Those of you in St. Louis, take note. Chicago reportedly taking meetings with illegal alien advocates from St. Louis and a deal to ship thousands of border crossers from Chicago to St. Louis. Well, isn't that swell? Coming the battle over the renewing law to help the FBI, and more on the terrorists already in the states and more coming, but lately they are weaponizing the law that they should use against Americans instead of terrorists. And before this hour is over, the true story on the man who killed Halloween. And coming up next, former CIA National Intel Advisor Fred Flights. Should we hit terrorist groups inside Iran, and what would be the repercussion? Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Hundreds of homeowners and businesses had or will have water main breaks. Wellington Environmental has a warning. You can clean up the water, but if you're not checking areas where the water leaked in the walls where you can't see it, you could end up exposing your family, your employees, your clients to hazardous mold. Wellington Environmental reminds you, if that mold is not detected, properly treated, removed, that is a risk, a liability you do not want. Wellington clients, including hospitals and schools, trust Wellington to make their environments safe. Call 314-644-4930, 644-4930, AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau, 314-644-4930. Wellington Environmental, your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
What if everything you thought and believed to be true about owning and buying your home turned out to be wrong?
Straightforward, objective advice on the right way to make the most out of every dollar you put into your home.
We're the only country that has one of those. Most other countries, considering like Canada, the UK, they don't have long-term fixed-rate mortgages like that. They're all variable-rate mortgages.
HomeWise with Michael Midget, Sunday mornings at 9 on News Talk STL.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps in the afternoon.
Horace, Americans individually have lost over $4,000 in income and over $7,000 where you have a household with both parents working.
It shouldn't be, it's the economy, stupid. We should just say, stupid! It's the economy. Unbelievable the devastation that Americans are feeling.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps, weekdays at 3:30
on News Talk STL.
This is Christina Strait with Strait Realty reminding you, why pay more than four? In 2003, we had a dream to start a real estate company that would revolutionize the real estate market. Now, 20 years later, after navigating through the many markets' ups and downs, we know exactly how to help you in this challenging time. I'm Christina Strait, owner of Strait Realty. Don't give away your hard-earned equity. Give us a call today, 314-441-4444, 314-441-ALL-4s. And remember, why pay more than four?
Strait Realty is a licensed broker in the state of Missouri.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
My guest is currently vice chair of the American First Policy Institute Center for American Security, but has decades of experience as CIA and national intel analyst, Fred Flights. Glad to have you on board again, sir.
Hey, Larry, good to be here.
Well, let's begin with the issue with Iran. And the reason I want to jump to that immediately is because, as you well know, while we've had the battle going in Gaza between Israel and Hamas, we've had rocket and drone attacks by Iranian proxy groups on U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria. Now, former intel director John Ratcliffe suggesting what we need to do is start hitting Iran. Your thoughts?
I think there's no question that Iran was behind the Hamas terrorist attack. And Iran is now trying to expand this attack and undermine American influence in the region and try to drive the United States out of the region by having its proxies in Syria and Iraq attack U.S. forces. And John Ratcliffe, who's a friend of mine, he's also with AFPI, he's expressed his concern that the airstrikes we did last week were frankly pinpricks. We attacked empty buildings.
Right.
And it didn't do anything to dissuade the Iranians or their proxies, and there were more attacks after the airstrikes. I think there have to be robust attacks that attack the leaders of these proxy groups. But I have to tell you, Larry, I am not prepared to support the United States bombing Iran. I want us to think that through quickly, and if that's going to be done, I want congressional input. That's an act of war. And if we're going to do that, I want to make sure Congress is on board. Let's first hit these proxy groups, then we can take that step.
Well, now, the proxy groups often are training in Iran. They've set facilities for them. They have equipment and munitions for them to use in their training. Hitting a training base, would that be considered separate than hitting Iran if it's inside Iran, or would it be one and the same?
There are training bases in Iraq and Syria. There are headquarters and weapons depots that we first have to target before we take the step of bombing Iran. We may have to bomb Iran, and certainly the Iranians deserve it, but I think the American people want our president to tread very carefully when we cross the line into doing something like that.
Do you see the repercussions would be immediate and involving not just Iran?
I mean, certainly it would cause Iran to retaliate, and I don't think we should be afraid of that. I just think we have to do this systematically. And let's first of all, we had to attack the proxy groups in Syria and Iraq. We know where they are. We know where their headquarters are. We know where their leaders are. But Biden wanted to minimize casualties, so he basically attacked equipment in warehouses. That was not the right response.
The warehouses apparently did have munitions and equipment, possibly, but this attitude that I don't want more deaths. When are they going to understand that you're not going to appease this enemy and you're not going to make friends of them simply because you're not killing them?
I mean, Larry, I don't know where to begin. We have Biden saying he is standing steadfast with Israel and condemning Hamas. And then we see these leaks to the media that we're questioning whether Israel is capable of attacking in Gaza, that we want to see their battle plans, that they better abide by international humanitarian law. Of course, Israel abides by international humanitarian law and the law of war. And you know how we know that? That's why Hamas puts its headquarters under hospitals.
Right.
In the entrances to its tunnels under hospitals, because Hamas knows Israel won't bomb hospitals because it's against the laws of war and international humanitarian law.
And yet, of course, the media is willing to go with the latest story from Hamas terrorist PR people.
And it's just appalling. And I see CNN finally backtrack a few days ago on that false report that Israel bombed a hospital. But why did CNN report that at all? That was unconfirmed information. It fell into the narrative that they want to report. Their viewers don't like Israel. They don't like the Israeli military. They've fallen into this liberal narrative that the Palestinians are victims here. I just think it was one of CNN and the New York Times' worst days, and the retraction should have been immediate.
Well, in one case, they were attributing to the source, but they didn't make it clear to the general public that the source was Hamas-controlled.
I mean, that's right. But even if they, whether it was Hamas as a source or not, they shouldn't have commented if Hamas was involved and they didn't confirm it independently, because of course Hamas is going to exaggerate. And we now know not only did Islamic Jihad, a Hamas terrorist group, attack the hospital, but a parking lot was hit.
Right.
And the casualties were much lower than Hamas had alleged. But that didn't stop CNN and New York Times and certain Democratic members of Congress from immediately condemning Israel.
Oh, they were quick to come out with 500 dead. How would they know that number in the rubble of a hospital?
Well, we shouldn't take any data that Hamas provides seriously. And it's interesting that Joe Biden said he's skeptical of numbers from Hamas because he thinks they're inaccurate. And people on his left are mad at him. Look, I give Biden a little bit of credit for what he said so far, but I really need him to grow his spine, because I know people on his left are angry at the position he's taken. He's trying to take the right position. He's also trying to play both sides. And Israel needs... We need no daylight right now between the United States and Israel.
Amen.
As it is facing this existential crisis.
I did the same thing you did. I gave him credit and points, even to the dismay of some members of my audience in his initial remarks when it all happened. But I said, you got to back it up. And there, as you say, we're beginning to see it falter. And I told the audience then, you watch. It will start as a small crack, like an earthquake just begins. Maybe we need a ceasefire. It's all over. We have a ceasefire. And that would be akin to asking the U.S. after Pearl Harbor, ceasefire, do nothing.
Well, that's what Netanyahu said yesterday. He said there wasn't a ceasefire after Pearl Harbor or after 9/11, and that's why Israel isn't going to implement a ceasefire. And those remarks are directed at the United States.
And what is the problem in the sense that the president is still accepting the progressive left? The resolution the other day that had bipartisan support to condemn Hamas had 9 Democrats voting against condemning Hamas for what they had done. And we've got rallies in the Congress. We've got rallies at a football game over the weekend, taking over the field. I mean, the nation is in turmoil, and we haven't really seen what the terrorists inside this nation might still do.
Well, I think we can say with certainty that the majority of the American people are with Israel. there is a large and noisy minority on the left, and it's getting larger, that's frankly morally vapid. It represents rot. And it isn't simply anti-Semitic and anti-Israel. It is. But these are the Black Lives Matter people. These are the people who burned our cities during the summer of 2020. These are anarchists. These are people who want to tear down our country, modern society. So it's not so, and I was talking to Ambassador David Freer, former ambassador to Israel. He said, look, a lot of these morons, they can't even spell Israel. They're just protesting because they hate our country.
Yeah, and I think many of them had no idea the history. And speaking of history, you have long watched what's happened all the way back to the Obama years involving Iran and giving them a capability to begin nuclear production, not for a weapon, but for just power systems and things of that nature. And that got trashed by Trump when he came in. Biden went right back into it. And there's been a report circulating. I'd like to know if you give it any credence that they now have created at least one nuclear bomb.
I hear reports from that from time to time. My former CIA director, Jim Woolsey, he thinks that's the case. I don't think Iran has constructed a nuclear weapon yet. I think they could do it fairly quickly. They have enriched enough uranium in a gaseous form that would have to be converted to metal to fuel a nuclear weapon. I think that would take about a year. But look, a year is far too close.
So where is China now in the midst of what's happening in Israel and Gaza Strip? And if we move against Iran?
Israel's not going to turn down any opportunity to cash in on a crisis that will hurt the United States.
You meant China, right?
I'm sorry. China will not miss out on opportunity. And I think we're seeing the same thing with Russia. But, you know, what's interesting with Russia is that if Putin decides to cheer on these Islamist terrorists, there are Islamist terrorists in Russia. And we saw them in Dagestan when they went after that plane from Israel when it landed, when radical Islamists raided the airport and tried to take over the plane. Those radical Islamists in southern Russia, they hate Putin, too.
Well, speaking of Putin, one other thing. From the Hill, they're quoting a mysterious Russian telegram channel called General SVR, a Russian political analyst, that Putin is dead.
Yeah, I hear reports like that once in a while, and maybe there's a body double representing Putin.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not over there, Larry. I don't know. I don't know what to say. I haven't.
He has been sick and battling some illness for a time. Is that correct?
There's been reports about that, and people who analyze photographs think they've seen that, but it's a very inexact science. So, you know, we'll know when we know. I think there would be people who would step in to try to take over if they thought he had died.
All right, Fred Flights, as always, I certainly appreciate your expertise and your time, sir.
Good to be here. Thanks, Larry.
You bet. Fred Flights, Vice Chair of the American First Policy Institute, Center for American Security, spent decades as CIA National Intel Analyst. He knows his information. He's often, as you've seen him many times, on other network channels and broadcast, video and audio. Always a great source. Always glad to be able to call on him. Coming up, Chris Christie, for What It Matters, thinks that Donald Trump is going to jail. That's what Chris Christie thinks. That story and the Halloween story coming up.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This time of year, heavy rains, high winds, they can hit, and if you have any loose shingles, even the smallest hole in your roof, you're taking a major gamble with your biggest investment. I can tell you from personal experience, do not wait until you have water where it shouldn't be. Don't forget that John Beal has disaster crews, which can at least cover your roof until the damage can be fully repaired. Homeowner, business owner, call John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. I have only one recommendation for you when it comes to jewelry. Vincent's Jewelers. I've had Vincent's custom make some pieces for me. I bought quality pieces right out of the case. Vincent's locally owned, supporting local charities for more than 42 years. Check their website daily for new items or specials. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Give Vincent's a chance for your business. Vincent's, my only jeweler. You can spend a lot of restless nights trying to figure out how you're going to make all those credit card payments. Why not consolidate all your debt into one manageable payment? My friends at Homestead Financial Mortgage can help with a cash-out refinance. Contact them today. Take the first step in regaining your financial freedom. Use my website, larry.homesteadfinancial.com. Take charge of your financial future. Go to my website, larry.homesteadfinancial.com.
News, analysis, opinion.
USA, USA. That's a big game, man.
President, she's really losing control.
People in China didn't ask me about people mowing each other down in a mall.
This is News Talk STL.
It is their responsibility.
Hate is a metastasizing agent.
We're all keeping a close eye on this.
Illegal immigration is crazy right now.
This United States is not being overrun.
News Talk STL.
It is a crisis at the border without question.
At NewsTalkSTL.com.
I really, really enjoy a great cigar and a premium whiskey. And if you do, you should join me at Lit Cigar Lounge in the district off Highway 40 in Chesterfield. Lit is open to everyone, but I decided to become a member. You can too. Get special gifts, special events. Ladies, don't be intimidated. Bring a group of girlfriends. You'll also enjoy Lit Cigar Lounge. Lit also has a cigar and tobacco shop on Main Street in Old St. Charles. LitSTL.com. LitSTL.com.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
We have a lot of Republicans that are watching this show. And I just want to say to my Republican friends that are watching, everybody that's testifying against Donald Trump, they're not editorial writers for the New York Times or primetime hosts at MSNBC. They are all Trumpers who stayed with Trump to the very end.
Yeah. Look, this is a guy who was Velcroed to Trump's hip for the entire 2020 campaign and all the post-campaign nonsense. And so this is deadly. It's done. He's going to be convicted.
But
it's over.
That's over, according to Chris Christie, in talking to Joe Scarborough of MSNBC and all these trials Trump is facing. One, the civil case that's underway now in New York with his sons and daughter due to testify. He's due to testify Monday, but it's a civil trial. Not going to send anybody to jail on that one, but you'll get some money out of him. And, of course, then again, that case is based simply on the fact that they claim that he overinflated the value of his properties to get loans for various projects. But not one bank institution, not one loan institution has come forward and said, we didn't get paid. We got defrauded. Nope. It's Letitia James of New York. She's making her name as she said she would. You elect me and I will get Donald Trump's scalp. And so she's trying. And then, of course, you have the other cases that are pending against Trump. But if you believe Chris Christie, then it's all over. Trump is not going to make it. And in fact, Leon Cooperman, a hedge fund billionaire who famously clashed with Senator Elizabeth Warren over her proposed wealth tax, is also cautioning voters against letting Donald Trump get back to the White House. He said it would be terrible for the country if Donald Trump were reelected. He's a divisive human being who belongs in jail. Now, this piece written by CNN does point out it is rare for a Wall Street figure to make such critical comments about Trump, at least publicly. That's CNN making that statement. Cooper in the past has donated to mostly Republicans, forcefully battled with Warren over her proposed ultra-millionaire tax. But the billionaire has previously said he voted for Joe Biden in 2020, quote, very reluctantly. He said, I'm not looking for a centrist, not radical right or left. Or I've said, I am looking for a centrist, not radical left or right. And he did donate to Chris Christie's 2024 campaign over the summer. Well, whoopee-doo. Now, here's something else I want to share with you. This is pretty interesting, especially for those who believe and want you to believe forever and ever that electric is the way to go. I mean, the Biden administration, green policy, you got Gavin Newsom going to meet with China, saying, we will work together. Together we will work. California and China, CC, we will work together on green energy. As if anything California does would affect the world's energy if it's just California. And the Chinese communists, they smile, nod, but they're not going to do anything Gavin Newsom wants. There's an idiot walking in a nice suit, flying around the world, emitting emissions from his private transportation, while telling you we're going to shut off all the gas cars in California in 2035. Won't be able to buy one. Already can't buy a gas lawnmower. So they're going to rely upon more electrical cars and things of that nature. But there's a problem here. My boots on the ground correspondent in Chicago pulled this up for me and called it to my attention. I would have overlooked it, so I certainly thank him. This was a piece written by a group called, let me get it here. It's called Just the News. You can check it out, see if you agree with it or not. But the story itself stands with some supporting evidence. When supply exceeds demand, a lack of transmission lines means the electricity has nowhere to go. So California grid operators are shutting down, are you listening? Shutting down wind and solar farms more than ever. California's build-out of wind and solar farms is exceeding the ability of its grid to handle all the electricity during periods of high production and low demand. So the U.S. Energy Information reported yesterday, curtailments, which is when wind and solar farms are deliberately shut down, increased to peak levels in 2023. In other words, they're not going to be able to get anything done. May 2015, one of their reports shows 41,000 megawatt hours electricity from wind and solar farms. In 2023, those farms totaled 702,000 megawatts. A 100-watt bulb consumes 100 watts of electricity every hour. So 702,000 megawatt hours is enough to power 7 billion 100-watt light bulbs for 1 hour. Now, you think I came up with that? Hell no. I don't know any of that stuff, but that's the way it's being reported, and I think they're probably right. All right, since it is Halloween, I have for you the true story of the man who killed Halloween. In fact, I interviewed him within days of his crime. That story when we continue.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want to give someone something which they will really enjoy? Give them a Cafe Napoli gift card. You pick the amount. They pick which of the Cafe Napolis they want to visit. Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Cafe Napoli in Town and Country, Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles, or right next door, Napoli C. The Napoli gift card. It's the perfect gift for anyone or your entire office. Cafe Napoli. Cafe Napoli.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
It is Halloween, October 31st. I want to tell you the true story of the man who killed Halloween, also known as the Candyman. It's October 31st, 1974. Ronald Clark O'Brien took his two children trick-or-treating in their Pasadena, Texas neighborhood. That's just outside Houston. I was a reporter in Houston at the time, and so we quickly learned about the story and started digging into it. So O'Brien took his two children with him and then had a resident next door with go with him, bringing his child. And there was one house that was dark, no lights on, so that normally indicates no one should be asking for trick-or-treats. Well, the house belonged to a man that a lot of people, he didn't like kids. They knew he didn't like kids. He was kind of a loner. Well, the Ronald Clark O'Brien told his friend, go ahead and take the kids to another house. I'll go see if he's got anything there by chance. And he comes back and says, look what he gave me. And he's got these pixie sticks. You remember those pixie sticks, about 5 to 6 inches long or so, filled with powdered sugar. You open them up and pour them into water. And if you want to make some Kool-Aid, or you just take them straight. Simple little gift type thing. But he said, I got them from the guy in the house. He actually was willing to give some candy out. When they got home, he gave 5 of the pixie sticks to a 10-year-old boy he recognized from his church who was from next door. And then his kids wanted to eat some of their candy, so he said, okay, I'll let you eat your candy, but you should choose the pixie stick. Well, his son, his 10-year-old, had trouble getting the powdered candy out, so the father helped him loosen the powder. The kid had tasted, didn't like it, said it tastes bitter. Well, then he said, well, we'll put it with some Kool-Aid, it'll be better. And he got his daughter to do the same thing. He got his 10-year-old son and then his younger daughter to do the same thing. Later, Timothy began to complain of stomach pains, went into convulsions, vomiting. O'Brien later said, I held Timmy while he was vomiting and he went limp in my arms. Rushed into the hospital. Death by the medical examiner, he had been poisoned. And the daughter also was sick, suspected the same thing. Now, O'Brien again claimed that he went to that house and that's where he got those. The guy didn't turn on the lights, he just cracked the door and handed him the pixie sticks. There were neighbors in that residence, that area, I should say, that basically wanted to lynch the man because they believed that he had poisoned the child with the pixie sticks. Turned out that the man was not even home. He was an air traffic controller at Hobby Airport. Didn't get home until after 11 on Halloween night. Well, after they had gone by the house. He had numerous people who could testify he was at the airport working. I interviewed Ronald O'Brien and his wife maybe 3 days after the death of his child. And I got to tell you, I've done a lot of such interviews. And you could call it a sixth sense or just by experience, something didn't seem right with this guy. His mannerisms, the way he talked. His wife was trying to hold up. She seemed normal under those kinds of circumstances, but he did not. But, you know, I don't want to go simply on my feelings and my thoughts. I just had doubts, and I mentioned to the photographer when we left. So then I reached out to a couple of the detectives I knew in Houston that were working the case, or Pasadena. I said, I interviewed the guy, and I just had some real doubts as to his story, the way it went down. And the answer I got back from one of them was, so do we. Well, of course, it takes time to actually get into details for what you're looking for, but in the process, they found that Ronald O'Brien had been unable to hold a job 10 years preceding the death of his son. He'd held 21 jobs. At the time he was arrested as an optometrist, he was suspected of stealing from the job and about to be fired then. Car about to be repossessed, defaulted on several bank loans. The family home had been foreclosed on. Don't know if the wife was aware of it at the time. But then, and here's always the trace element that leads back sometimes to motive and certainly gives a validation. During the investigation, police learned that Ronald O'Brien was about $100,000 total in debt, be about $590,000 plus at this year's date, and couldn't hold down all these jobs. In January of 74, before his son's death in October, Halloween night, that next day, he had already taken out in January 74 $10,000 insurance on both of his children. 1 month before his son died, he took out an additional 20,000 policies on both children. And that was, as I said, both policies on both children, took it out 1 month before his son's death. Days preceding his son's death, he took out yet another $20,000 policy on each child. They totaled about $60,000. The wife said she didn't know anything about it. But the morning after Timothy's death, the father called his insurance company to inquire about, how do I collect the money on my son's death? I'm being crass in the way I said it, but how he said it doesn't make any difference to me. We know he did. Then they found out that shortly before Halloween, he visited a chemical supply store and bought cyanide, and that he had obviously poisoned the candies to kill his children to collect the insurance, and he gave other children, some of the poisoned candy to try to cover his tracks. Thank God not one of them opened those pixie sticks. He was finally arrested November 5, 1974. One count of capital murder, four counts of attempted murder, that including trying to kill his daughter and others he gave the candy to. He also became known as the Candy Man. Took the jury 46 minutes to find him guilty of capital murder and the four counts of attempted murder. He had numerous execution dates, each of them being stayed for various reasons. But eventually he was executed, and his final words, what is about to transpire in a few moments is wrong. However, we as human beings do make mistakes and errors. Therefore, I forgive all those who took any part in my death. Outside the Texas State Penitentiary, a crowd had gathered, some shouting, trick or treat. But finally, the Candy Man, the man who killed Halloween, had been put to death. In our next hour, more on the 702 form for the FBI and our open borders, threats to our nation. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.